For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Time once again to talk about your car, your truck, your van, and the problems you may be having with those vehicles and the need to maybe bring it in for service. But before you bring it in to your favorite dealer, your favorite shop, you might want to know what could be ailing. A little more information is better than less. And the guy that help you out, give you a little analysis about that problem, is none other than Nick Stoffel, ASC certified technician, among other things, wears a lot of hats, has repaired a lot of vehicles in his career. Gee, it sounds like you're 100 years old, and you're not. You're still a young guy. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Denny.
Thanks for joining us again today. I was thinking, I wanted to ask you, and I know we had a listener ask you about this some time ago, and you can think about it. What are some of the toughest jobs that you've ever had, either at Lloyd's or on your own, or whatever the case may be, that it took forever to fix, maybe with a little help with your colleagues? Can you think of anything?
Yeah, I mean, usually it's the intermittent, which we often discuss, those intermittent issues or a drivability issue that, you know, we've been through the wiring diagram three different ways. You know, we've checked every point that we think we should check. And then there's always that, like, odd, why didn't we think of that after the fact? So it's usually more of like a disappointment that it took us so long to figure it out. And it's like, geez, why were we thinking this? You know, why didn't we go that way or vice versa? And we've gotten better. You know, we have a really good group everywhere. So usually when you put the collective minds together, we can usually find our way through. But there's been times where it's been like, okay, we need to just stop and do something else and come back to this later because I don't know what we're doing anymore.
Yeah, that can happen for anybody or any job. I remember when I had brought in, we talked about this, I had a problem. The ABS light was blinking or couldn't figure out what the heck the problem was. And it was ended up to being a mouse had built a nest, but it was so hard to see. I think it took two or three of your technicians to actually, you know, get their eyes on it. It was really it's amazing what these critters, how they can hide out and the damage they can do. If you have any kind of a car care question, by all means, let me give you the phone number. It's also the text number, and we're already getting those. But don't wait, by the way. We always like to tell you this. Our time goes by so quickly. And Nick takes his leave about 7:45, making way for Ted Farrell's wine chat. So if you have any kind, you always want to ask a mechanic a question, this is your opportunity to ask Nick that very question. 651-461-9226. Call it in, text it in. Either way, they both work. My daughter, texter says, took her 2015 BMW into the dealership for a new battery. She was charged $800. Does that seem excessive? To me, that seems excessive. You don't know the whole story, obviously, Nick, but what might have happened there? I mean, you can just take a guess.
No, we don't know the whole story there, but I will tell you that a lot of those batteries, some of those European vehicles, the capacity, the size of them, they can be several hundred dollars just for the battery. The location of the batteries can be under a driver's seat, passenger seat. It can be buried in the trunk of the vehicle. So there can be some time involved with replacing it. Obviously, there might have been some testing. And then a lot of vehicles these days require a little initialization or kind of like a programming or a reset that requires a scan tool. So $800 does seem like a lot of money. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it can be quite costly. That I do know for sure.
I was reading something, of course, on the internet. It's all true, of course. But I was reading something about another import. I won't mention the manufacturer, but it was a V8 that they no longer make. And the advice from this particular person was saying, if you want to look for this particular model car with the V8, be sure that the timing chain or timing belt, whatever the case may be, has already been changed, because it's like one of those jobs where you got to pull the engine. And they quoted, again, I don't know if this is real or not, but this particular level of this import cost $10,000 to do that. And I suppose that could be realistic given given that type of vehicle, right?
Yeah, it really does depend. I will tell you that, you know, I can remember when Audi and Volkswagen, we first serviced one of those probably with a timing belt on the front of the vehicle, and you actually pulled the front clip off, and we thought, oh my goodness, what are we getting ourselves into? Now the guys prefer it because you get that front clip off and everything's right in front of you. You raise the vehicle up at, you know, waist level, and it's all in front of you. So it's actually makes it a little bit easier versus trying to crawl in there. But, you know, there are certain vehicles and designs that were very cumbersome and complex, the tooling and like the sheer time, you know, and, you know, some of these jobs can be, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours of worth of work. And you got to make sure you do your due diligence and you're prepared for whatever might come next.
Texter heard us talking about the difficulty in some jobs. He or she wants to know, do electric cars, are they more of a problem? Are they more difficult to work on these days?
No, you know, they're very similar to a hybrid vehicle. You know, they have this high capacity batteries, a lot of the similar wiring, a lot of the same systems, cooling systems. You know, there's a lot, you know, they're still a vehicle. They still have steering, suspension, brakes. All of those items are the same. Just the way they're propelled down the road. An electric vehicle has a electric motor versus a combustion engine. We do see them. There's maintenance and there's repairs that happen on them. There's a learning curve, obviously, like with everything, with any new technology. But it's not a problem. You know, and if you're looking at one, I wouldn't shy away from it. Make sure it fits your needs and your lifestyle. If it checks those boxes, by all means, you should drive what you want.
I'm thinking electric cars specifically, thanks to that texter. But what else is different? Obviously, with an electric car, you don't have oil to change. But are things like brakes, like you suggested, are those all the same exactly as a, quote, regular car?
No, but what we will see or have seen is that the tires wear a little faster because of the sheer weight, you know. So there's some of those things where, you know, it's a heavier loaded tire. You might not have as many options for tires. So there will be an adjustment, but it's always been that way. And we went to, you know, from carbureted to fuel injection to electronic ignition, you know, all these different features that we have in vehicles with adaptive cruise control, all of the parking assist. So there's a lot of things that have always evolved. But I honestly, you know, they're... you know, there's more cooling systems, there's a lot more sensors, a lot more, you know, differences, you know, that we see on some of the later vehicles, whether it's electric vehicle or, you know, a hybrid or a standard vehicle. They all have their niches and their issues, I would say.
I know we mention the word once in a while, very seldom, and that is, you just mentioned it, carburetor. When's the last time you or your crew had to work on a carbureted vehicle?
Vehicle, not so much, but snowblower, yes.
Oh,
which that's we won't need that for a while, no, either. No, the lawnmower. So yeah, no, it's just, we don't work on those vehicles any longer. It just we don't have the know-how. You know, a lot of those guys that we had over the years that specialized in that stuff have since retired, and you know, those vehicles really take a fine ear and a special touch, especially as they've aged. You know, there's tweaking and adjusting with a lot of that technology. And, you know, there's still shops out there and places out there that still service those vintage vehicles. It's just not in our wheelhouse anymore.
Okay, very good. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more questions. If you have, again, if you have any kind of a car question for Nick, you don't have to be a motorhead or a gearhead. If you have an issue with your vehicle and you want to know what could be ailing, call us, text us. But do it soon before Nick takes his leave. Here's the number, 651-461-9226. Let's see how we fixed in the weather department here. 60 is the current temp. We are heading for 82 today. It's going to be a nice day today. It looks like kind of a rainy, windy Sunday night, and maybe a Monday as well. We'll get you details coming along in a few minutes, but right now, fair skies, beautiful morning here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Denny Long here, along with Nick Stoffel, ASE Certified Technician, among other things, at Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Nick, we always like to ask for folks that maybe need the assistance of Lloyd's, how do we find you? Give us some information, please.
Absolutely. As you know, you can call us. We will always answer your questions. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. If you're in St. Paul, you'll find us on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth, which is 982 Grand Avenue. For any more information, do check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good, Nick. We'll get Nick to give us that information just before he leaves us, which is about 7:45 or so this morning. Call us or text us. with any car question that is on your mind, 651-461-9226, either phone call or text. Speaking of phones, Bill is on the horn calling in from Bloomington this morning. Thank you, Bill. What is your question for Nick?
First of all, I'd like to say I enjoy your show, and I'm a long, long-time listener.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And my question is, I have a 1993 LeBaron convertible, and I've had the shocks tested like three different times, and they all say they're good. But when I'm driving over uneven roads, it just bottoms out continuously. And I'm wondering what could be causing that.
Well, you know, obviously they might think the shocks are dampening fine, but holding that load or the weight of the vehicle, obviously the convertible is a little bit heavier on the back end. I would see if it's the correct part in there. Maybe at some point in time they were replaced and they weren't replaced with the exact same load setting. I knew they also had those overloader, I can't remember what they were called, but they were a little heavier duty shock with maybe even a coil spring attached to them. That's, you know, that vintage of those early 90 vehicles that we would install, especially if you were carrying more stuff in the trunk or more people in the back seat. This case with the convertible, there's obviously more weight back there. So I'd do a little research to see if there's a different shock that can be back there to better support all that extra additional weight.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate that. Thanks for the comment, too. 651-461-9226. Texter asked this, Nick. I have changed the battery on my key fob. I still have messages saying no key fob when trying to start. I then place the fob close to the push button start. And that's kind of the technique if that issue arises. What could be going on there, do you think?
Well, you know, they answered both questions. Put a new battery in, and I would unfortunately say try another one. A lot of times those little key fob batteries sit on the shelf longer than they should. So you might just have a bad new battery. That's the easy thing, and you're correct. If you hold it next to the push button, the responder becomes a transponder, and they kind of reverse roles, and the vehicle will start. Obviously, you might not be able to unlock the vehicle, so it might be just that fob has lost its ability, lost its programming. There is a way to have those tested. I would say that would be, first thing, get another battery. I know it's new, but try another one because that has happened to us. And number two, make sure that fob is operating, have it tested, and then unfortunately, you might have to have it replaced. My opinion on that, I know there's a lot of stuff online, but I would go back to the original manufacturer. They work better. They last longer. They have a better range, less likely to have some issues there. So if it does need replacement, I'd go back to the original manufacturer.
And again, I keep thinking of something that I have not done, and we talk about it, is if you still have a key for your doors, use that once in a while to kind of exercise it, right?
Absolutely try that, and It's so funny because those are things we don't think about. And then when you're in a situation where the battery's dead or what have, now you can't get in. So it's not something you need to do on a daily basis, obviously, or weekly, just whatever you think of it. So if it's once or twice a year, that's probably sufficient. But everyone, when we're off the radio here, go out to your vehicle. If you have a key, lock and unlock that door, make sure it still works.
Absolutely. Oh, man. All right. Texter wants to know, what is your opinion on resale value of electric vehicles? You think will the batteries last for a number of years?
Yeah, they do. I can tell you based on the hybrid type vehicle, which they've been around a lot longer and a lot larger volume of them. We do replace some of those batteries, but typically the car is well over 10, maybe 15 years old. So if that's any indication, I honestly don't know what the warranty on those batteries are. I'm sure it's a little longer period of time, but if you're getting 15 plus years out of a battery of any kind, I think that's pretty good. I do think that they're designed to last that long. I'm not sure whether the duty cycle and the charge rate, there's a lot of variables obviously involved there, but on a used vehicle, if it's, 6, 7, 8 years old, I'm sure you're going to get more double or triple that length and longevity of that battery, so I probably would not shy away.
I was mentioning briefly that I was into Lloyd's to have my oil and filter changed in my car. What was it? Last Tuesday. And our friend Dan Burns was the guy that drew the short straw and did the job. But I hadn't seen Dan for a while. It was great chatting with him. But he asked me, because I got newer tires. Lloyd's put on some newer tires recently. And he said, these are new, right? I said, yeah. He said, probably won't need to rotate. And that brings to my question and a texter's question. How often should tires be rotated?
It's a very good question, and it depends on the tire.
I've mentioned my truck in the past, and it's a newer truck, and it came with these knobbier tires, and we rotate them every oil change because I do not want them to become worn unevenly, which creates a bunch of road noise, premature wear. So depending on the type of tire, maybe it's not every oil change, but it's likely every other or every third at the longest. So, you know, and we're doing oil changes at 5,000 miles. So if it's at the 10 or 15,000 mile interval, that's probably appropriate. Having done this my whole life, I can tell you that there's a little cost associated with it, but a couple things, we get a good look at those brakes, which is nice to know, and those tires will last longer. Rotating them, having them contact the road from a different position in the vehicle does add to the length of the life of the tire, which tires are extremely expensive these days, so it's money well spent.
I know you and I talk about this quite often, maybe it's for folks that don't drive a lot, it's good, but I look at the manufacturer of these oil products, and some say you don't need to change for 10,000 miles. I know some dealerships will tell you that too, depending on the manufacturer. I saw one that said you don't have to change for 20,000 miles. I'm not comfortable with either one of those. You and I always talk that for synthetic, which most is now, I guess, 5,000, like you suggested.
Yeah, I agree. I feel really strongly about that. And I'm not going to dispute that these products out there that cannot last that long. That is probably true. I'm not a chemist, a scientist, but what we do is fix cars every day. And we see a lot of oil related issues. And I just can't preach it enough. 5,000 miles on the synthetic. If it's a conventional, which is, like you said, less common these days, it's a 3,000 mile interval. Get fresh oil, a good clean filter, and the car gets a good shakedown. You know, that's the other thing too. We always worry about the oil and the filter, but the rest of the vehicle needs to have a look at.
Yeah.
And if you go too long, you have a problem that was repairable or adjustable. Now it's faulty or broken, it becomes more expensive. So maintenance does cost something, but I promise you, maintaining the vehicle is much less expensive than repairing a vehicle.
Be proactive, for sure. Hi, Nick. This texter says, my 2019 Ridgeline does not have a manual, and I'd like one for my own planning. You can find that online, can't you?
Correct. And I referenced my truck's about a year and a half old. It didn't come with a manual either. It came with a QR code can get an app. So now I got this app that I can page through, which is not my style either. I like to have paper, but it's probably the right thing. We don't need to have a bunch of paper in the glove box of our vehicle that we don't ever look at. So if you look online, there's definitely a sources online. You can get the manual and get any information you need.
Absolutely. Nick, we're going to take a break for that forecast. We have some other questions to get answered via our text line. If you want to call in your question, great. If you want to text, fine. 651-461-9226. We'll have more car care coming up here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Denny Long here, along with ASC certified technician Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive, answering those questions. We still have a bunch, Nick, so we'll put you back to work here. Texter says this: as of this last year, I've become a new snowbird. I'll be leaving my 2025 Chevy Traverse stored in my garage for about 5 months. Would I be better off with a battery maintainer while I'm gone, or just disconnecting the battery?
Well, if the garage is a controlled climate, meaning it's heated, or you can easily remove the battery, bring it inside, that works just fine. I think the maintainer is also a nice option. So it depends on your garage, your availability to plug it in, the ease to get the battery out. So there's a couple of variables there, but I think either is fine. If it's a garage where the temperature is going to get down to whatever the outside temperature is, probably get the battery out of the vehicle and get it inside where it'll stay, at least, you know, put it in the basement so it's a controlled temperature.
All right. That might be the easiest. Here's a 2019 Chevy 2500 pickup. The infotainment screen randomly switches to other screens without even touching it. Oh, those electronics. What would you do in that case, Nick?
I would see if there's any software updating. You know, a lot of times we can plug in with our scan tool and go to the different modules or computers, and there might be some improved features or some bugs that they've worked out. So, you know, checking for our latest and greatest in that software might be the solution there.
All right. Another mystery here. 2021 Mazda CX-30, the vehicle, after stopping, would not start. It seemed to have something to do with the anti-theft software or device. The next day, it started fine. A few days later, same situation occurred. That was over a month ago, and the problem has not reoccurred. How would we be able to point where the problem is, or do you think that was just a fluke?
Well, it could be one or the other there. I think it's worth taking it in. Once again, there might be some data that's stored in one of the computers. There might have been, you know, maybe it was a little bit cooler at that point in time. The battery capacity might be lower when it was colder, and maybe that was the problem. But I would at least have it scanned, see if there's any fault information stored to give us a clue. Intermittent problems are always very frustrating. If it hasn't happened in a month, I'm thinking we're okay too, but it might be just best practice to at least get that information out of the vehicle to give you peace of mind.
All right. Nick, here's via text, a 2014 Mercedes GL450. It says, my radiator cap came off. I ordered a new one. How long do you think I can drive it before I get the new cap? We'll be here in about 4 days. Oh.
If it's the actual pressurized cap, you should not drive it. If it's just like one of those reservoir flip-top caps, it doesn't matter. But if it's a cap that's threaded down and holds pressure, you need to wait to get a new cap here, unfortunately.
Okay, don't do that. All right, let's see. We have time for more. Yes, Texter says, I have 50,000 miles on my Jeep Renegade. Have had to purchase new tires 3 times already. I've rotated them every year, and they still wear out after 20,000 miles. I bought good Bridgestone 75,000-mile tires. The last time I bought new tires, they told me rotating them was not enough. I should have my wheels aligned every time I get an oil change. Does that make sense? They want to know.
No, I think it's a bit excessive. And if it's wearing through tires that fast, that's strange. I would definitely have the alignment checked and adjusted accordingly. But, I, you know, on that type of vehicle, and it's a good quality tire, I can't think of any reason why it did wear out in 20,000 miles. You know, some sportier vehicles, by all means, yes, we would see that. But on that particular vehicle, I would expect you to get 50,000 miles out of one set of tires. So I think having the alignment measured, make sure it's correct, do any adjustments that are needed, continue to rotate your tires, but 20,000 miles definitely doesn't seem right to me either.
No. Texter heard us talking over the, well, over the years, really, about filters, oil filters, air filter elements, things like that. This texter wants to know, what kind of filters does Lloyd's handle? What kind of quality filters? They assume it's quality, and I know it is.
Absolutely. We try to put back the same level or quality original equipment. The fact is that there's only a couple companies making the filters. Now, there's different grades, and we always want to use the better grade. Maybe you don't always have to use the very best, but definitely better OE level quality filters. But there's only a few manufacturers that repackage them into dozens of different vendors that are selling them. So when you're at the parts store, if you're looking to have it replaced, if there's an option, you don't need the absolute greatest that they have, but you also don't want something that's on the inexpensive side either. The cabin filter keeps the, especially this time of the year, it's collecting all the stuff out of these, out of the air, out of these trees, keeping it from getting into our cars with us. The engine also appreciates having a good quality air filter. So all the cars running, you're getting good clean air into the engine for combustion. And obviously oil filters, and if your car has a fuel filter, same idea there, that those filters need to be replaced. And we want to use something that's going to do its job and do it well.
Yeah, absolutely. What about, in the auto parts stores, you go in and look at the book or whatever, ask for some help, saying, I've got such and such a car, and yeah, the filter is over there in the corner, and it's this and that. I mean, there must be some quality filters in these stores as well, right? If you're careful.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's funny, if you open the box and take the filter out, there's going to be a stamping by the company that made the thing. And oftentimes it's the same exact filter that came in the vehicle when it was brand new. So you can buy original equipment quality in the parts store. Once again, it just, you know, ask the person at the counter and say, hey, I want to put something like quality back in. They can refer you to, you know, because I'm sure they have a good, better, best option. And I'm sure with a little research, you can determine the right one for you.
Yeah, good point. Here's a listener's text that says, 2013 5.3 Silverado. You're going to have to help me with this one. Silverado, should I plug in an 864 interrupter so it runs on 8 cylinders? I have a friend whose motor dropped a lifter and it ruined his motor. He was told that if it was running on 8, this would not have happened. What is this texter saying?
It's a fuel management system that General Motors does. So at highway speeds, it'll shut certain cylinders off. They have had some issues with some of those components prematurely wearing out. When they wear out, they can create some damage inside that cylinder head. And if it goes long enough, you can damage the engine. That's all true. There are things in the aftermarket that can eliminate that. I always struggle with that type of stuff. I understand the reasoning behind it. I'm sure there's some good technology behind it. But anytime, you know, at Lloyd's, we don't put vehicles different than when they came where they were manufactured. Like, we don't do any performance stuff or any modifications. We just like to put them back the way they were. That way we know it's going to be best practice. But this case, do all your research, talk to a lot of your peers. There are people out there that have those tools that plug in. And honestly, I don't have any experience. So I can't give you my fair assessment, but I would say do your research. If it's a good fit for you, maybe it's worth a try.
I was, as I mentioned, in Lloyd's the other day, Tuesday, getting oil change. And I was sitting there waiting. And I was talking to Jimmy there at the front desk. And I said, you keep track of when I bring in my car or truck, either mine or my wife's, for service. Oh, yeah. I said, I thought I brought in my wife's vehicle for an oil change, and I thought it was like December. Let me look it up. So he looks it up. And much to my chagrin, the last time she hasn't been driving it. Last time the oil was changed was last July. What could have happened? And again, you know, with 400 or 500, I don't think even 1,000 miles has been driven on it. What can happen to that oil even if you don't drive it?
Well, the oil will absorb moisture. It can create some condensation. And, you know, in a one-off situation, Denny, you follow to the T. You're really good at maintaining your vehicles. You keep them spotless. So you're not the concern. It's the rest of us that forget and don't do it. And, you know, the car's been sitting, and that happens year after year. We forget and you don't do it. Well, that condensation becomes sludge. The sludge can plug up different parts of the motor. And that's what we want to avoid. So like we've been saying here, if you bring the vehicle in once or twice a year, let us look at it. Let us decide, hey, you know, it's been a year since we've done the oil change. We should do it. But also we noticed this and these other items that need to be looked at just to keep the vehicle reliable, safe on the road. You know, you're not wearing it out by driving it necessarily, but things sitting stationary is not good for them either. So to have it looked at least to give you some advice and recommendations is probably a good plan.
Yeah, and especially if it's 10, 11 years old, think about those original tires. They get awfully brittle after a while. We've talked.
Yes,
about
they
that.
Do. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Nick, we have to get out of here, and thanks again for your help. For those that need help from Lloyd's, how do we find you guys?
Yes, sir. So if you have a question, you don't have to bring your car to us. We'll still help you with the question. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. And if you are in St. Paul and you want to come see us, you'll find us at 982 Grand Avenue, two blocks east of Lexington Parkway. For all that information and more, check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
And as you know, Nick, next week, one week from today, we will be doing our shows live from the By the Yard showroom down there in Jordan, Minnesota. So we'll have more car care at that time. In the meantime, Nick, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, Denny. Thank you.
Thank you. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.